Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In a special election last August, Columbus voters overwhelmingly rejected a plan to expand city council to 13 seats, with 10 of those seats representing districts or wards, and 3 of the seats at large. Opponents of the ballot issue waged an expensive and effective campaign against the proposal, but backers of the ballot issue had managed to get enough signatures to get the question on the ballot. They could do it again. At the time, Mayor Andrew Ginther appointed a special committee to recommend its own version. The city council has until the end of July to vote on the recommendation from that committee on whether the new iteration will go before city voters in November. Joining us to talk about that and what's next is Columbus Dispatch City Hall reporter Rick Ruin. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
The new version expands city council and creates districts, but it's much different than the proposal that went before voters last August. What's the big difference?
So the keys to the proposal are that the Charter Review Committee that the mayor and Councilman Shannon Harden appointed want to add 2 council members. So currently the council is 7 members. And this would add 2 additional members, bringing it to 9. The city would then be divided into districts, and you would have 1 council member from each of the 9 districts. However, the individual districts would not be the only voters who are electing those individual representatives. The entire city would vote on each member of council.
What was the logic behind creating the districts but continuing with an at-large vote?
I think what the committee was trying to accomplish was to give a diversity of voices on council from across the entire city, but not take away votes from voters. So the logic is, as a Columbus voter, right now you get to elect 7 representatives who all represent your interest. If you're only electing 1 person from your district, then you're only getting 1 vote to represent your interests.
Could council change as it deliberates this going forward and up until the deadline at the end of July? Could council change what the Charter Review Commission has proposed?
Sure. I mean, council will vote on something to take to the ballot. At least that's the feeling right now. They don't have to accept what the Charter Review Committee ultimately gave them. They can tweak it. They could change it outright if mm-hmm. they wanted to. But it doesn't seem to be the direction that this is heading.
There has been 1 public hearing, right?
Yeah, so far it was actually a committee hearing, one of council's standing committees, where they brought in the chairwoman of the Charter Review Committee to give a rundown for the council members who were present about what those recommendations are and to answer questions from those council members.
So are there other public hearings on this coming up?
Yeah, there's one that's scheduled for next week, and there's at least 1 other one. Sorry, I don't have the dates and times
okay.
immediately in front of me, but there are going to be at least a couple more hearings before council ultimately looks at something to vote on. But as I wrote recently, they are running out of time. They mm-hmm. need to make a decision about this before they break at the end of July, if they want this to be on the November ballot.
Right. That's just a statutory thing because of the ballot language needs to be created and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Jonathan Beard of Represent Columbus, that was the group behind the 2016 ballot question. I read that in at least April he had another plan. Whatever happened to that?
So Jonathan's plan that he submitted earlier this year would have done 2 things. It would have expanded the council from 7 members to 13. 10 of those members would have been from wards, and the districts themselves would have voted for those members. The other 3 would have been elected at large, like all of our council members are now. The second thing that it would have done is it would have instituted a bunch of different campaign finance reform pieces. So it would have capped donation to council candidates at $1,000 from individuals and businesses, $5,000 from political parties. The city attorney's office ultimately determined that that did not satisfy its single subject rule in the city charter. So the city law says the petitions have to contain only one proposal. They cannot address multiple unrelated subject matters or questions of law. Because there were those two pieces to it, the city attorney's office determined that it did not meet that single subject rule and therefore ultimately couldn't move forward. Since then, I've not heard anything from Jonathan related to a new proposal or whether he's seriously challenging that with the city. But at this point, it just seems to be kind of hanging out there without anything moving forward.
A big criticism of the proposal that voters decided last August and ultimately rejected, a big criticism was that it failed to describe what those 13 districts or what those 10 districts, I should say, would look like. The other three seats would be at large in that case. Does this proposal, as it stands, that's before the city council now, does it describe what the 9 districts would look like?
No, it does not. And in fact, the apportionment process drawing those lines seems to be the biggest open question right now with that proposal. I know that folks in City Hall right now are looking into what that process would look like, who would appoint members to a commission that would draw those boundaries and what exactly the rules for those would be. But right now, that's still very much unclear.
And the Charter Review Commission did not take up campaign finance. Obviously, it's not in the proposal that may or may not go before voters in November, but it was an issue anyway. But the Charter Review Commission didn't take it up. Why?
Well, if you were to ask the Charter Review Commission, I think they would probably tell you that it wasn't part of their charge, that they had a
who set their charge definition.
That would have been the mayor and Councilman Hardin. They're the ones who appointed the group. So they gave them questions to answer, and they put their answers in a report, and campaign finance was not necessarily part of those questions. I mean, it wasn't. You have to be clear, too, that the expansion of council is not the only thing that was part of that report. Another thing that the Charter Review Committee looked at was whether council members should be full time. Right now, Columbus City Council members are part time. Mm-hmm. They came back with a recommendation that no change be made there. But campaign finance was not part of their purview.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Mayor Ginther promise to address campaign finance when he was running for election?
I don't know about campaign finance. I know that ethics was
ethics,
a
that's
significant
right.
issue in the campaign, and the city has done some things around that. They've appointed a chief ethics officer. The mayor brought in Tracy Rechen to fill that role. They've done more with requiring financial disclosures, not just from elected officials, but from director level city employees. They changed the way that their campaign finance databases are set up. Previously, you could only get campaign finance information from the Board of Elections. Now the city has a searchable database for city officials, not countywide, obviously, mm-hmm. So that you can see who's contributing to campaigns. who's taking money from whom, lobbyist database that has been significantly changed in the last year or so. So I think that those recommendations from the mayor have moved forward. But in terms of, you know, what we think of when we say campaign finance reform, limiting campaign contributions, which is what Jonathan Beard's proposal sought to do, which is what a lot of the grassroots efforts that you see from groups like Yes We Can, things that they're talking about, those have not happened.
I mentioned it, I think, in the introduction at the top of the hour. It's often pointed out that Columbus is probably the biggest city in the country without a district or a ward system in place. Is there any other city that's comparable that has a system that's being considered by city council now where there would be districts but at-large voting?
I don't. It depends on what your definition of comparable is, I guess. Reno, Nevada has a similar system. You see this out west a little bit more. I believe it's in Oregon where you see some of their county councils that have a similar system set up. But by my count, Columbus would be the largest city to adopt something like this.
And do we know anything about how it works in Reno, for instance?
Not a lot. The system has been challenged. It has faced legal challenges out west, but it had more to do with how their primary system was set up, and it survived those legal challenges. That doesn't seem to be something that's going to be a major issue.
Well,
here.
I was gonna ask about that. So we're talking about nine districts being voted on at large. Could multiple people run in each district? Would that be the primary level?
Well, you would ultimately end up, at the primary level, but you would end up with one candidate. So in the end, you would have a head-to-head race.
And would the primary, and then would the primaries be, right now, would it turn into a primary where we'd have a Republican and Democratic primaries that would decide who of the multiple candidates in each district would go? So is that how it would work? Could move on to the general election, I should say?
Yes, that is my understanding. So you would have a primary and then you'd have a Republican and a Democratic candidate who would run in the general.
Okay. Rick Ruan, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
No problem. Thanks.
Rick Ruan is City Hall reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Coming up, we're going to hear pros and cons on the system before City Council right now, what they're looking about, proposing, and putting on the November ballot for all the voters to consider. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And even if you don't live in Columbus, if you've come from a place where there is a ward system, where there is a district system of some sort, give us a call and tell us how you think it's worked in places you've lived in the past. We'd appreciate it. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. In a special election last August, Columbus voters overwhelmingly rejected a plan to expand city council to 13 seats, with 10 of the seats representing districts and three at large. Opponents of the ballot issue waged an expensive and effective campaign against the proposal, but backers of the ballot issue did manage to get enough signatures to get the question on the ballot, and they could do it again. At the time, Mayor Andrew Ginther appointed a special committee to recommend its own version. The city council has until the end of July to vote on whether that new iteration will go before city voters in November. Joining us is President and CEO of Innovation Ohio, Kerry McCarthy. He's a member of the Charter Review Committee I just talked about. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And also Will Petrick of Yes We Can Columbus. Will is also a candidate for city council. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann.
Will, you've called the current language that we talked about in the previous segment to expand city council seats representing districts but voting on them at large a good start. How would you like to see this finished?
Yeah, so I think the biggest issue in the current proposal is that at-large elections in big city continue to favor wealthy special interests, like the developers and the real estate industry. So when you think about the current proposal, basically it moves from 7 city council members to 9, and all of those are council districts, but they're all voted on at large. So
except for in the primary stage.
My understanding is that it's voted on at large both in the primary and in the general election. And basically, this leads to a situation where, you know, still the big wealthy interests can kind of control the conversation. And with district elections, if you actually have just the folks who are voting in the districts, it not only lowers the campaign costs, but will ultimately lead towards more representation, more of a voice for neighborhoods.
If it was district voting only.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think the concern for me is this actually leads to a scenario where people in a specific district could vote for a particular candidate and the rest of the city could vote for another candidate. And so those people don't actually have their representative of choice. The other, I guess, situation I think it's you can kind of compare it to is if you think about, you know, I vote for a state representative and a state senator. It would be like the whole state of Ohio voting on my state representative and my state senator.
Okay, Kerry McCarthy, you're a member of the Charter Review Committee that came up with this plan. What about that?
Yeah, I think I'll share with you what informed my opinion and my conclusions on this. I think, number one, competitive elections are really important. To me, I think having competition creates better democracy. And as we looked at the difference in competitiveness between ward systems throughout the country and slate card ballots and head-to-head, it was pretty clear that ward district elections were the least competitive. And so if you—
In what way? Why were they less competitive? What did you— Did your analysis show you about that?
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, people would go unchallenged in ward systems. They would build up some name recognition, and
but don't we already have that in the at-large system we have now? Lack of challenge.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the last slate card ballot, the lowest winner was only a few percentage points behind the first person who lost the election. So there was much greater competition than what we've seen in ward systems in Ohio and throughout the country.
The thing that Will Petrick just brought up about the financing of these elections, that's very affected by whether it's a ward election versus an at-large election. So whether it's the district voters only vote for their own representative or whether it's an at-large thing. Because no matter who you are, you have to figure out the funds to pay for a citywide election.
Well, and I would also just keep in mind that there's the political process for these elections was not something that the Charter Review Commission weighed in on.
Why not?
Well, because it's not in – that's not what – the charter can't control what the county party does, right? So the city of Columbus can't control what the endorsement process – the political endorsement process of the county
but
Democratic
the,
Party.
The actual mechanics of having to run citywide is – it's a simple equational difference. I mean, you run citywide, you have to raise funds to run citywide. If you run only in a district, you only have to raise funds to – reach the voters in that district.
But you can't I don't think it's fair to look at it in a vacuum because there's a political process that takes place in which you have the party endorsing a slate of candidates who are going to do the exact same thing under a ward system that they would at an at-large system, which is raise money collectively to champion their endorsed candidates.
But so that's you how don't the political really... party chooses to do it. Again, you said you don't have any effect
or
right,
you know, control over that.
Right, right.
They choose to do it that way.
Right, right. So what we were looking at is how do we create a system that that creates that neighborhood voice, which is something that we want. And I would say, you know, the other thing that was informed my opinion was, you know, I think there are some real challenges with ensuring that there is some neighborhood representation and some voice in the process. I think the other thing that informed my view on this was that, you know, for various communities, it's hard to know which council member to call. And then I think lastly, the idea that multiple candidates can live in the same – multiple council members can live in the same district doesn't seem right. So, you know, those are the things that informed my opinion. And moving to a district system, you have – you have both the opportunity to make sure there's greater neighborhood representation, and then you also, but you also don't create a system where there are turf wars between the various wards. And I think that's very important. I spent some time working in Cleveland politics where there, at the time, there were 21 council members, and it became a small general assembly, which was, you know, made it difficult, I think.
Well, that's a size issue, partly, right?
Yeah, right, right.
It's not
right.
How it's constructed necessarily, right. But more of a size issue.
And do you mind if I
just want to tell people that they're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And we're talking about what's before Columbus City Council right now in terms of a change in the representation on City Council. They're looking at expanding council by 2 seats from 7 to 9, all of which would be voted on at large. That means, but each of those 9 seats would be representing a district in the city, even though it's voted on at large. Will Petrick?
Yeah, I just wanted to weigh in on the issue of competitiveness in our elections. So at the state level, there's been redistricting efforts because of gerrymandering. And basically, in gerrymandered districts, it's set up so that it's a safe seat for Republicans or a safe seat for Democrats.
And we still don't know how these will be drawn.
We still don't know how these will be drawn, but there are best practices from the Brennan Center for Justice on how do you draw both competitive districts, have it be mm-hmm. equitable in terms of population size, in terms of having minority representation, making sure racial and ethnic minorities aren't split up. And also making sure that districts are contiguous and compact. But to go back to the issue of competitiveness in our local elections, there's actually an article about Portland, one of the other cities that has delayed its process in terms of moving to council districts. But it highlighted Portland and Columbus as the two cities where it's been over 20 years since an incumbent has lost. So if you're an incumbent, it's safe. It's not really a competitive election.
And you don't think this proposal before City Council would change that? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. It continues to keep control centralized by big money. I think, to me, you can't separate the council district process with the influence of big money in elections.
Kerry McCarthy, running in a city the size of Columbus is expensive. It's hard to raise that much money without the party backing, mm-hmm. without that endorsement. What about that?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, the process of electing our representatives is important. We didn't weigh in on campaign finance.
I know
reform.
That. Yeah.
I think that if you're comparing what we have to what we're talking about doing, it's a pretty big step forward. You know, the idea that, you know, I mean, the recommendations could have been just to add one council member and maintain the status quo. That's not mm-hmm. what we're doing. I believe we're taking a pretty significant step forward in creating many of the things that that Mr. Petrick and you know, his supporters have advocated for. And you know, does it solve every problem? No, but I don't know that any solution does. There are problems with moving to a ward system that, in my mind, are very real. I mean, we heard, we heard some compelling testimony throughout the committee process that, you know, voters have rejected this time and time again. Why would we do something that is that is contradictory of what the voters have said. That's the first thing. Now, to me, was that the overarching thing that drove my decision making? No, but it's a factor. And there are many people in the district that don't want change. So, you know, we're trying to balance that with, I think, what is a pretty reasonable step forward to try to create neighborhood voice in a way that also maintains competitive elections and make sure that voters are have an opportunity to win.
If I live in one district of the city, how do I know what is right for another district when it comes to electing representation?
Well, I mean, we all live in the city of Columbus, so we're all bound by the fact that we live in one community. So, I mean, I think, and certainly, you know, you don't live and stay and work and, you know, exist in one neighborhood. You travel the city. I mean, we're one community.
Actually, and that's Columbus, where I think this, Carrie, I mean, Columbus is considered the most segregated and economically segregated city in the country. Mm-hmm. So that's not the case in Columbus. That may be in other big cities, but it's not really the case in Columbus. That's a well-documented situation we have here. So how do I know if I live in German Village in a $500,000 pad in German Village, how do I know what Linden needs?
Well, I mean, that's why I think that's a case for why I think this proposal makes sense, because you give voters in a particular community the opportunity to have one representative that has to live in that community, that has to understand that community. The current system doesn't do that. You could potentially have all seven council members living in one community. And so that's why this proposal, mm-hmm. I think, is an important step forward.
Once again, let's see. Terry in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I'm not impressed by the new proposal, but from listening to panelists, it sounds to me also like there's a tacit admission that the current system is a failure when it comes to the idea that local neighborhoods are represented. And we've gone for at least 20 years then with such a failure. Another thing I'd like to point out is in the recent vote on a new system for wards, the voter turnout was pathetically low. Now,
which is typical in August. I mean, that's not unusual.
Yes. But another point one of the panelists already made, but I think I should repeat it anyway, and that is while there is at the State House a lot of despicable gerrymandering going on where the Republicans are trying to get the advantage over the Democrats.
And the Democrats did before the Republicans. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. But in the current system and probably in the system that is being proposed, it looks to me like the Democrats are just doing the same kind of thing that the Republicans are doing in the State House, although the details are different because it is a city council.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Terry, because I want to ask Kerry McCarthy, what about drawing the districts themselves? Who decides that?
To be determined. I don't know.
That was considered a flaw in the August ballot proposal.
Yeah, and I think that needs to be fleshed out.
Why did you decide to wait? Why did the
to determine the process for drawing we had a limited amount of time to make some recommendations. We knew these recommendations were going to be a starting point and they would need more work through the council process. But let me say one thing about redistricting. This is another reason why I like this proposal. The redistricting process, as was alluded to, can be very contentious. I've been on the receiving end, on the losing end of it when I worked at the General Assembly, and we went through the redraw of the state legislative districts. It's very contentious. It can tear communities apart. It can be
problematic. It's going before the United States Supreme Court.
That's right. That's right. What I think is interesting about this proposal is, yes, districts would have to be drawn, but because the districts don't have the factor of determining that one seat, that one
because it's at large.
Because it's at large. It takes the pressure off of the contentiousness with which those districts would be drawn. So the magnitude of the line drawing process and the significance of the line drawing process is not as great under this system. And that is a real risk. Lawsuits, challenges, differences of splitting various neighborhoods within a community apart. This proposal takes a little pressure off of that process, in my view.
What if a What if a neighborhood can't generate a candidate in that neighborhood that can afford to run for city council at large?
I don't know. I mean, there are some, the council's going through a process right now to flesh out those questions. Mm-hmm. You know, my view is that is a very unlikely scenario.
That every neighborhood has at least one person.
Right. I think the thing that Will brought up earlier, which is the idea that you could have some, there's 1,000 hypotheticals, you know, but the idea that someone in a neighborhood may not be elected by that neighborhood and therefore may be elected citywide is an unlikely scenario. That's just the reality of politics. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying it's unrealistic.
Okay.
And I think that if you are in a district and you're voting at large and you can concentrate a high number of votes from that community, you're going to be successful. And that sort of gets lost in this whole conversation. And that's my view.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I see what you're saying. Will Petrick?
So I just want to kind of take a step back and talk about, for me, like the big picture in this. When I first got involved in this effort, there was a group in the Old North that was basically resisting a development across the street from Cafe Kerouac, and the whole neighborhood came together. It was renters, it was landlords, it was small business owners, and this development project, it was the Pavey project, people just thought was disrespectful to the history, to the spirit of the neighborhood, but there were also parking and safety concerns, and as a community, we all came together with one voice and spoke up again and again and again. And at the end of the day, I think a lot of us felt like the one developer still had more of a say in this whole
neighborhood. And the development went forward.
Yeah, in the future of that neighborhood. So I think when I think about kind of specific neighborhood projects now, you know, there's the Scioto Peninsula development in Franklinton. There's the North Market redevelopment deal. And these developers are they're donors to city council, to the mayor's office, and they're getting millions of dollars in tax abatements. And again, people are upset and people want to see, how is this going to benefit me and my neighborhood? There's all this new development. Is it affordable for people that live in Franklinton, that live on a fixed income?
Email from Brad. I think Columbus should look at how Chicago has worked with the system of wards and aldermen. It can become corrupt when certain longstanding aldermen become overly powerful and their wards get all the benefits. At least the current way we do things here, there's a group that is acting hopefully in the best interests of the city as a whole. I would love to see local people representing their neighborhoods, but that type of system quickly devolves. Columbus will find that out down the line. So what about that? I mean, Will Petrick, as you've examined this process, what would you insert into it, say hypothetically, if we did have districts voting for district reps, how would you avoid that kind of strongman scenario that we've seen in some other big cities?
Yeah, so actually one example from Chicago, so the aldermen in Chicago each have basically some discretionary funding for capital improvements, mm-hmm. for sidewalks, for roads.
Which is something that's not addressed in any of these things, right?
Yeah, and so each specific representative has a set of resources that go towards that neighborhood. And what the aldermen in Chicago did was basically say, I want this whole neighborhood, I want my whole community to be involved in what are we doing? These are our tax dollars. We should all have a voice in where these are going. And so they implemented what's called participatory budgeting, where basically
the aldermen.
Yeah.
Not all of them.
No, this was one alderman.
One alderman.
But it's something that it's an idea that is now kind of emerging in different districts in Chicago, different districts in New York. But it really, to me, it's kind of rethinking, like, what does our democracy look like, and how do we make sure that we as taxpayers have a real voice in where resources are going in our communities.
Email from Frank. I live in Westgate, and I'm extremely frustrated with how city council works. There are winners and losers, and my neighborhood is definitely one of the losers, even though it's a great area with great people living there. The defeat of the 2016 proposal is nothing but the winners maintaining the status quo, and the people who built that status quo are the ones making the recommendations. I want a representative of me on council, not a carpetbagger who can be stacked by the rich districts. Kerry McCarthy, from where you sit as a member of the Charter Review Committee, can you address that?
Well, I don't think this is status quo by any stretch of the imagination. Status quo would have been doing nothing, or at a minimum, adding two council members at large to adjust to our growing population. I don't think this is status quo. I think this is a pretty significant divergence from the status quo, as a matter of fact. And I think it offers, no one really loves it. Both sides have issues with it. The people that want the status quo want the status quo. The people who want districts, have some reservations. You know, when you're trying to create policy in a diverse democracy in a large community like Columbus, I think that's actually a sign that you've got something right, because it's, splits the difference between maintaining the status quo, but takes a step in the direction towards, creating stronger community voice. So that's my view on it. I mean, obviously, reasonable people can disagree.
We will continue to cover this. I thank both of you for joining us, Kerry McCarthy, president and CEO of Innovation Ohio, and also a member of the Charter Review Committee. And Will Petrick, city council candidate and part of the Yes We Can of Columbus. Thanks for joining us, Will.
Thanks, Ann.
And Kerry, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Coming up, we're going to hear from a political scientist who studies these kinds of issues and see what she has to say. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Columbus City Council has 7 seats voted on at large to represent some 800,000 residents. Most cities the size of Columbus have more seats, including at least some that are voted on within the districts. Most have seats that are district organized and are voted on just within the districts. Last August, Columbus voters overwhelmingly rejected a plan to expand city council to 13 seats, with 10 of those seats representing districts and 3 of the seats at large. Opponents of the ballot issue waged an expensive and effective campaign against the proposal, but backers of the ballot issue had managed to get enough signatures to get the question on the ballot. That tells you that Columbus city voters are frustrated, and something like that could get on the ballot again. At the time, Mayor Andrew Ginther appointed a special committee to recommend its own version. The city council has until the end of July to vote on whether the new iteration will go before city voters in November. So we want to talk about the larger questions involved in this. Joining us by phone is political scientist at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Paru Shah. She teaches and studies race and representation and urban politics. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Ann.
Columbus, is it that rare, a city of 800,000 with 7 council seats all elected at large? We heard some descriptions of where it falls in the matrix of city politics. So what do you say about it, Parusha?
Yeah, no, it is actually really unique considering the size of the city and the fact that it's an older city. A lot of newer cities do these at-large elections only, but I was listening into the previous comments, and it's true that places like Chicago, Milwaukee, other Midwestern longstanding cities with significant diversity tend to have ward elections or district elections.
Columbus is big, but it's only kind of newly big. I mean, it's grown a lot in the last 30 years. Do you think that is part of the dynamic here that we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that those changes in demographics brings is renewed effort from communities to think about how best to represent, how best to be represented. And again, I think one of the things that came up in the previous conversation that I would agree with is that at-large elections by nature mean that all the people who are elected represent everybody in the city. And there are benefits to that because you don't feel as if it maybe at least curbs some of the feeling that there's winners and losers within a city based on geography. At the same time, it could feel as if you're not getting enough representation. When I was asked to comment on this, I did a little research to see like what was the impetus last year for bringing this on. And I do think that growing population size has really meant that people feel like they need additional bodies and people who are more connected to the communities that they live in.
So, yeah, there's two issues here. When it comes to constructing this, one is the size of the council, which is small for 800,000 people.
Yes.
And
yes.
Number two is whether council members actually hail from different areas of the city. And right now they don't. You know, there's definitely cities or areas of the city that are left out. And it's too big of a city to have that happen, right?
Right, exactly. And I think what's interesting, again, is that research would tell you that most large cities like this use ward elections, and it really benefits things like minority representation, right? Making sure that different voices get heard. What I think is interesting about Columbus is that there already is, I think, a lot of diversity on the city council. And so that probably isn't, I would guess not one of the main drivers, but that still means that geographically people do feel a little bit left out, especially if people don't think that if there are issues that are pertaining to specific neighborhoods that city council members are not aware of.
As long as you have at-large voting, though, like they're proposing, like the plan that's before Columbus City Council now, ultimately, who will the representatives on city council be answering to? Who they'll always be answering to the public at large, not their own district.
Yeah, that's correct. The system that they're proposing now is actually really unique. I know that there's a few other cities. I think Tucson, Arizona has the same system of mm-hmm. members need to live in the district, but you're elected at large. And so it's kind of a different setup because you're not, what ends up happening is you don't get the benefits then really of the ward system, the true benefits of having somebody who is living within your community and answers to your community is potentially able to bring in resources to your particular community. But one of the other, I think the flip side of that is that you then also maintain the fact that every single person on that city council answers to the whole public. And so it's an interesting idea. I do think the fact that it was voted down last year, I think says something about one. I would agree with, I think, one of your comments, which is that there's a lot of frustration about the current system.
That it got on the ballot at all. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But that maybe this isn't there's still a struggle to figure out like what would be the best system given the growing population size. And it also appears to be like growing in terms of size of the city. So,
well, Columbus is still a part-time city council, technically. I haven't really analyzed, what that actually means. But for a city this size, is that typical part-time?
I would say that there's different levels of professionalization across cities. And so there are some that are very, very part-time and then some that are less so. I do think that when you have city council members who have other jobs and other obligations, that reduces, obviously, their ability to spend as much time maybe as necessary for city politics.
Go ahead.
Well, and I was going to say, and so then you on the flip side of that, though, right, is that then you don't also get full-time or professional politicians in those positions, which could have, be both good and bad again.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Paru Shah. She's a political scientist at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She teaches and studies race and representation and urban politics. We're talking about the prospects before Columbus City Council right now. They're considering a plan to expand city council from 7 to 9 council members, each of which would have to live in one of 9 districts and be voted on at large. So if I live, as I described earlier, in German Village, I'd be voting on someone ostensibly representing Franklinton. If you have a question or comment for Paru Shah, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. A big criticism of the current system, and this will not change with what's before the city council today, a big criticism is that it costs too much to run citywide. Emerging politicians can't afford the freight, and the ruling party, Democrat, typically in an urban setting, controls who gets to run. They'll still be endorsing at the primary and probably at the general or not at the primary level necessarily, but in the general election level. The cost of running in a city like this, expensive, right? It would be very different if they stayed at the district level.
Yeah. One of the things that I also study is candidate emergence. And we have shown time and time again that cost as a huge inhibitor for new candidates or people who are trying to break into politics. And so if you were to move to ward-based elections, that would reduce the cost and potentially allow for more what I would call grassroots campaigning, which definitely decreases the entry level for many individuals. The party endorsements are also going to play an effect here. And given the fact that the majority of people who are running in Columbus are of the same party, I could see how this would be problematic for people who are looking for, I mean, I think in general, people are always looking for more competition. That if with less competition,
that the voters are always looking for more competition.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The voters are looking for more competition so that they feel like they actually have choice. That it's not the same old, same old. And so all of those things kind of play into this idea of kind of dropping the bar in terms of entry for people who are not of the usual party. And I put that in quotes, people from not the usual, you know, from my perspective, gender and racial demographics, people who are not from the usual side of town, right? And so if those are things that could be influenced, but again, as you noted, this would only be if actually Columbus went to a true ward district system where the elections happened within those districts as well.
Is there any sense that in an at-large system that we're talking about now in which I would be voting for somebody in another district, another place than where I live, that there's something good about that, that it forces you to kind of learn more about the rest of the city? As I also mentioned earlier, Columbus is one of the most economically segregated. Well, it is considered the most economically segregated city in the country.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, so when I was doing a little research about segregation in Columbus, I do think that that's going to play a role. And so while there are benefits to ward elections, right, so you can get somebody from your community, as we all know, right, we work in a majority-takes-all democracy. So at some point, that person is going to have to work with the other people who are elected to get policy passed. One of the benefits, then, of course, in the net large, is that everybody is potentially trying to get voters from all over the city. And that means that maybe I'm paying attention more to what's happening on the other side, even though I don't live there, because I know those people are going to be voting for me in this election and hopefully voting for my reelection. But it's unclear. It sounds, again, as if people are unhappy with what the current process is. And so if those at-large elections are not influencing, right, or people aren't feeling like they're actually getting the policy passed that they want, the legislation passed that they want, that they're not feeling that they're being attended to by the whole city council, then there needs to be some way of kind of holding those people accountable.
A big scare tactic that opponents of the district/ward system put before voters last August was that they would have, you know, six more seats on council, and that we'd be paying $80,000 a seat per year. You know, the cost to the city would go up a lot. Is there a sense that you can give us about what city council members should be earning? And I know that it's a lot more expensive to live in Chicago than it is Columbus, but is there a sense that you can give people if that issue arises again?
Well, I think, again, this goes back to my point about professionalism. I think there's trade-offs for if you pay your council members very little, then the expectations of what they are actually able to do in that job versus if you pay them a full-time salary. And so I think it's a little bit about kind of balancing what the desires are for that person who's your elected official. And I don't think there, I mean, I think the range, you would be surprised how little, maybe you wouldn't be surprised. There are people, city council members who make $1,000 a year. And so it's really just essentially a volunteer position, to city council members who are making, you know, six figures. And so Columbus, my guess would be that, if they could determine a salary that maybe put them at around 50% of what people would normally make in a full-time salary, and those kinds of positions, at least gives you then the kind of people who are going to look to take on that role are going to be people who take it seriously and are going to commit a significant amount of time to it, and still hold other positions that, you know, or other jobs that give them kind of some more flexibility in terms of their ability, the kinds of people who would actually be able to run.
We only have about a minute left, but I wanted to ask you to weigh in on the issue of strong mayor versus city manager type of government. Any thoughts about that, about where, if there's a tipping point when the size of a city, as it changes?
You know, strong mayors are something that are, again, classically Midwestern, Rust Belt city, older city types of forms of government. And I think that given the size of a place like Columbus and location, it makes sense to have somebody like a strong mayor. Mm-hmm. City managers, however, I think can really bring a different type of professionalization and way of thinking about the role, right? Elected versus somebody who's doing this kind of as a job and doesn't have to worry about elections. Mm-hmm. I do think that it's difficult to switch. And what's interesting, again, about Columbus is the changing demographics, because it really is similar to places in the West where the city manager style of government is very popular. But to lose out on that strong mayor, to have that person, that one person who's accountable, mm-hmm. that the voters can say, look, you promised me to do this and you didn't, and so we're going to hold you accountable to that, I think is difficult to move away from.
Pauru Shah, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Pauru Shah is a political scientist at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She teaches and studies race and representation and urban politics. Thanks so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.